Jaya Radha Madhava Kunda Vihari, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunda Vihari, Gopijana Balaba Gopijana Balagopa Giribadadha Yasodanandana Brajajanurandahuna Yamunatira Panachari, Jai Hurada Madhava Kunjabihari, Jai Radha Madhuba Kunjabihari, Gopijana Malabha Giribhadadhati, Gopijana Malaba Giribarudhaudi Yasodanana Rajajanuranjana Yasodanana Rajajanuranjana Yamuna Tira Jai Radha Madhuva Kunyabihati Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Paravitakacharya Osu Teda Satishi Shivad. His Divine Grace Avaya Chalanada Bhaktivedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai, Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai, Prem Se Gaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sridvaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaur Bhaktivedanta Ki Jai, Shri Shri Radha Krishna, Gop Govinda Sayam Kun Radha Kunda, Giri Govardhan Kijai, Vrindavanam Kijai, Maturam Kijai, Jagadasami Kijai, Yamunamai Kijai, Shrimati Lasi Devi Kijai, Sama Veda Bhakta Vrinda Kijai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bho. All glory is the assembled devotees, all glory is the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. So Om Gana Timidandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Jaksuran Meditam Yena Tasmai Shigadve Namahas. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. So kindly open my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So we are now continuing with our study of Bhagavad Gita in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Here we go. Let's begin with text 27. We left off with text 27. So this is actually one of the most prominent verses in the Bhagavad Gita. Text 27. Prakriti Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha Ahankara vimudatma kartaham iti manyate. So prakrite, of material nature, kriyamani, kriyamanani, being done, gunai, by the modes, karmani, activities, sarvashaha, all kinds of ahankara vimuda, bewildered by false ego, atma, the spirit soul, karta, doer, aham, I, iti, thus, manyate, he thinks. So, translation, the spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of nature. And we talked about this before, that the three modes of nature are controlling each and every one of us. just like a marionetteer or a puppeteer controls his puppets, unless we are actually transcendental to the modes, or our consciousness is transcendental to the modes. There's no way out of it. Either you are transcendental, or you're being directed by these modes to act in a particular way. And one associates with different modes, becomes influenced by different modes, by eating. We talked about this before, eating certain types of food, hanging out with certain types of people, listening to certain types of music, watching certain sporting events, watching certain movies, associating with different times of the day, taking intoxication, gambling, you know, all these different activities are connected to certain modes of nature, and then we associate with those modes and become influenced by these modes and controlled by the modes. Some people say, the devil made me do it, but actually, it's the modes that we embrace, that we accepted, that are forcing us to act. We still have personal responsibility because we can choose to be affected by the modes, or we can choose not to be affected by the modes. It's up to us. Two persons, one in Krishna consciousness and the other in material consciousness, working on the same level, may appear to be working on the same platform, but there is a wide gulf of difference in the respective positions. The person in material consciousness is convinced by false ego that he is the doer of everything. He does not know that the mechanism of the body is produced by material nature, which works under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. The materialistic person has no knowledge that ultimately he is under the control of Krishna. The person in false ego takes all credit for doing everything independently, and that is the symptom of his nescience. He does not know that this gross and subtle body is the creation of material nature under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and as such, his bodily and mental activities should be engaged in the service of Krishna, in Krishna consciousness. The ignorant man forgets that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Hrishikesha, or the master of the senses of the material body. For due to his long misuse of the senses and sense gratification, he is factually bewildered by the false ego, which makes him forget his eternal relationship with Krishna. In other words, whatever we do, let's say there's two things. Whatever we do outside of Krishna consciousness, that's Krishna giving us not only the control, but also the intelligence, the strength, as Krishna says in the Gita, to do those things. So it's actually, in one sense, Krishna is empowering us to do it. And whatever we do in Krishna consciousness, it's actually the same thing. So we're dependent on Krishna. As they say, man proposes, God disposes. So we can make an endeavor, we can take some action in a particular direction, but the result is actually up to whether Krishna wants it or not. So next verse, Tatvavit. Tu mahabaho guna karma vibhagayoho guna guneshu artanta iti matva nasajate. So tatvavit, the knower of the absolute truth, too, but mahabaho, O mighty arm one, guna karma of works under material influence vibhagayoho, differences, guna senses, guneshu and sense gratification, Vartante are being engaged in tea, thus matwa thinking, nah, never. Sajate becomes attached. One who is in knowledge of the absolute truth, O mighty armed, does not engage himself in senses and sense gratification, knowing well the difference between work and devotion and work for fruitive results. So in other words, he can gratify his senses because the senses need a certain amount of gratification. But if it is done under the direction of Krishna, within certain limitations, then the senses become gratified. But if one doesn't work in that particular way, the senses don't become gratified. There's an interesting verse in the Gita. Avritam gyanametena gyanino nichabhayana kamarupena kondiya dushparena analena cha. That it is like throwing gasoline into a fire. The senses want more and more and more. So one who's intelligent understands that there is no satiation of the sensory desires. However, if one engages those same senses in Krishna's service and accepts gratification, we all need some gratification. That's true. I mean, we need to taste tasty food. We're not going to be like, yesterday we were talking about Raghunath Das Goswami, who basically rested 1.5 hours every day in most days, or some days, not at all like that. And he was eating rejected rice. Those of you who heard the story yesterday. He was eating rejected rice that even the cows wouldn't eat. Of course, he watched it and put some salt on it. So we're not on that level. I mean, a yogi, even apart from a bhakti yogi, can live without eating or drinking. A yogi can live basically with breathing so little that it's unimaginable. And Prabhupada one time said that frogs are like yogis. That may come as a surprise. Because during the winter, the frogs are able to go in the mud in the river or in the lake and sort of hibernate. In other words, they control their breathing and bodily functions to such an extent they just slow it down. So all their bodily functions are at a minimum, just maintaining the life air is there to some extent or completely. And then when it comes time for spring, they just pop up through the river again and start croaking. So that's, they're yogis. So actually there are yogis who can control their breaths in the same way, and there's yogis who live for literally hundreds of years, if not thousands of years. Prabhupada described that during this big festival in India called Kumbh Mela, and that's when all the yogis come down from the Himalayas, and actually many of the spiritualists come from all over India and from around the world. It's the world's largest spiritual festival. Something like 10, 20, or 30 million people attend this particular festival. The world's largest, probably largest festival of any type, 30 million people at one time, or even more. So, and Prabhupada attended several times. Prabhupada said the yogis, some of the yogis were actually hundreds, if not thousands of years old, and they would come from the Himalayas to attend this spiritual festival. So, there are yogis with yogic powers and doing all these sorts of things. It's very, very interesting. So, we're not saying that one has to be like that. One can eat and sleep and mate and defend according to what one needs in life to keep the mind peaceful, to keep the body satisfied, but not too much, not too little. As we mentioned many times before, Krishna says that the yogi does not eat too much nor eat too little. So, but if we do everything in accordance with what Krishna wants, then the senses actually become very peaceful and we're not agitated. Oh, I need this. I need that. Okay. And that's the difference between work and devotion. And if you're doing things, if you're eating to get strength to please Krishna, if you're eating prasadam, then you'll be pleased. So purport. The knower of the absolute truth is convinced of his awkward position in material association. He knows that he is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, and that his position should not be in the material creation. In other words, he knows this is a foreign country, this material world. He knows his real identity as part and parcel of the Supreme, who is eternal bliss and knowledge, and he realizes that somehow or other he is entrapped in the material conception of life. In his pure state of existence, he is meant to dovetail his activities in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. He therefore engages himself in the activities of Krishna consciousness and becomes naturally unattached to the activities of the material senses, which are all circumstantial and temporary. He knows that his material condition of life is under the supreme control of the Lord. Consequently, he is not disturbed by all kinds of material reactions, which he considers to be the mercy of the Lord. In other words, he understands that somehow or other, if something bad happens, something good happens, physically, mentally, to the situation, it's Krishna's plan. However, if he does something stupid, that is not Krishna's plan. Like if he falls asleep while he's driving, that is not the mercy of the Lord. I remember there were devotees who fell asleep while they were driving, and some of them passed away when Prabhupada was present. Not in the same geographical location, but Prabhupada was told about it. And Prabhupada said it was not Krishna's mercy, it was their foolishness. So things outside of our control are directed by Krishna. And sometimes things that are apparently disastrous are actually stepping stones for a devotee's advancement in devotional service. Or, as we say, when life gives a devotee a lemon, he makes lemonade out of it. Because we see Krishna in everything and behind everything. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, one who knows the absolute truth in three different features, namely Brahman, Paramatma, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is called Tattvavit. So Brahman is the energy, the white light that emanates from Krishna. Paramatma is Krishna's expansion, who is in everyone's heart, and also in every atom, every aspect of creation. And the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Krishna in his original aspect, interacting with his intimate devotees in Goloka Vrindavan or in any of the other spiritual realms, or in the local places of Krishna's pastimes in the material realm, such as Braj or Ayodhya, Jagannath Puri, in different places like that, or Mayapur, Navadweep. These are all spiritual abodes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that person who knows that is called Tattvavit, because he knows his own factual position in relationship with the Supreme. So what is our factual position? Our factual position is that we are Krishna's servants. It's as simple as that. So we had a very interesting discussion in class this morning. Mother Irmla was giving class, and we were talking about, or she was talking about, and the verse and her quotes were mentioning that one should aspire for a particular type of perfection. So what that means is, according to one's level of advancement in devotional service, the type of perfection that one aspires for or hankers for or is greedy for is different. For example, if one is first starting Krishna consciousness, one hankers for the perfection of being engaged according to one's psychophysical nature, fully one's mind, one's body, one's words, in service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as one advances and becomes relatively free of anarthas — anarthas means unwanted things like lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy, fear — as one becomes free of those things, and then one gets a spurti. That's an interesting word. A spurti means like some realization or a vision of what one's position is. There's an interesting description of a spurti in Bhaktivinoda Thakura's book, Daiva Dharma, in which there is a Mayavadi sannyasi becomes a devotee. And one day he gets a vision of what Navadvipa or Mayapur was when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was present, said Saspurti. So sometimes we may get a brief glimpse of who we are. Of course, that should be corroborated. And for those of you who don't know what the word corroborated means, it can mean verified. But in any case, it should be verified by consultation with advanced devotees, advanced pure devotees. A pure devotee is someone, here's what a pure devotee is. It doesn't mean someone who takes baths many times a day, or else, you know, there would be a lot of people who are pure just from taking a bath. But pure inside and outside. And so a pure devotee is described by Rupa Goswami as someone who is devoid of any sort of subtle or gross desire. What do you mean by subtle or gross? Gross means like, want more money, want to enjoy those gross senses, and want more than is actually my quota. And subtle desire means like, it's called profit adoration distinction. I want everyone to know how wonderful I am. I am me, you know. Look at me. Of course, many people join the theater for that particular reason. So that's gross and subtle. And then also one is devoid of a desire for even getting the HELL out of this material world. Because that's also self-centered. That's called liberation, mukti. One doesn't want to get out of the material world. One simply wants, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Mama Janmani Jamanishvare Bhavatat Bhakti Hoitaki Twaye. Simply wants to be Krishna's servant wherever Krishna sends one. Another nice verse in that connection is Narayana Paraksarve Nakatuatschina Vivyati Swakabhavarga Narakeshu Apitulyartha Darshana. That he can go anywhere to serve the Lord, heaven, hell, liberation, in the spiritual world. Anywhere except he doesn't want to take the position of someone who enters into the Brahma Jyoti and gets impersonal liberation, because that means there's no activity, no service. So anyway, so that's the position of someone who is absolutely pure. So if we get this spurti, hey, I understand, I am a tree in Vrindavan. Then we go to a pure devotee and say, my dear pure Srila Purapad. I know there's no one by that name. But my dear pure devotee, spiritual master, or rather pure devotee, I just had the realization I'm a tree. First of all, am I qualified? That's called adhikar. Am I qualified actually to have that realization? You know, do I have enough cleansing of the heart that's been there already? And the pure devotee, Mr. or Mrs. Pure Devotee, will say yes or no. And then they'll verify that. They'll say yes. Therefore, you should concentrate, since you're a tree, you should concentrate on spreading your arms out and absorbing the sun. I mean, I'm just joking about that. Because you can't enact your spiritual identity or perform your spiritual activities with a material body. But they'll give you something to meditate on. You, as a tree, you should meditate on producing fruits to please Krishna. All sorts of fruits. Because the trees in the spiritual world are desire trees. Here in the material world, one tree, or a specific tree, only gives one type of fruits. Of course, you can graft some other branches from another tree and maybe two types of fruits, something. But then there's a season for it. You know, it's apple season, peach season, orange season. Just like right now, in India, it is mango season. I was just talking to a devotee in India, and he was saying, it is so wonderful here. It's mango season. And I said to him, if you eat too many mangoes, you will get mango poisoning. And he said, I don't believe it. And then he talked to someone else. He was from America. And the person said, yeah, it's really bad. You get mango poisoning. And then this person said, oh, no. Just when I'm trying to enjoy this material world, it's taken away from me. That's life. You know, everything has its particular downside to it. Everything we try to enjoy has, except for Krishna consciousness, has a downside, like a thorn on a rose or something like that. So, anyway, so a completely pure devotee, we describe what it is. So we go to the pure devotee just to see, you know, if we're actually having a bona fide realization. And one has to be very careful about that. One has to be humble. One has to think him or herself to be unqualified in this particular way. So this is very important. But in the beginning, we can all aspire to serve Krishna with this body in this world, offer everything, all that you offer, all that you give away can be done as an offering to Krishna. Text 29. Prakriter guna samudaha sachante guna karmasu tanna krishna vidahu mandan krishna vinat vichalayat. Prakrite, material nature, guna, by the modes. Samudha, be fooled by material identification. Sajjante, they become engaged, guna karma su, in material activities. Tan, those. Akritsna vidha, persons with a poor fund of knowledge. Mandan, lazy, to understand the self or self-realization. Kritsna vid, one who is in factual knowledge. Na, not. Vichalayat, should try to agitate. Bewildered by the modes of material nature, the ignorant fully engage themselves in material activities and become attached. But the wise should not unsettle them, although these duties are inferior due to the performer's lack of knowledge. This is a very important instruction by Krishna. Let's say I go out. I mean, let me give an example. Here in Nugaloka, we have these workers who are working on the temple. And unfortunately, they do have some bad habits. Some of them are smoking cigarettes. And so I have to understand how much I can tell someone before I drive them crazy. I mean, I could go to that cigarette smoker person and tell the person, stop it immediately. You're killing yourself. You're breaking the regulated principles. Obviously, they don't know what the regulated principles are. But what I do is I give them prasadam, and I encourage them, and I said that, you know, the cigarette smoke is not the best thing for you. So I know how to gradually apply the medicine. And Srila Prabhupada was like that, too. There was this one devotee, Shyamashundar, who was carving these deities of Lord Jagannath. I think many of you have seen the Jagannath deities. And as he was carving these deities of Lord Jagannath, he still had the habit of smoking, and he had the pack of cigarettes resting on Lord Jagannath. You know, he's a sculptor. I guess sculptors do that all the time. And so Prabhupada saw that, and instead of yelling at him, of course, he did say, take the pack, don't leave the pack on the deity. Prabhupada said, try to smoke one less every day. So Prabhupada was very expert. Prabhupada called it in like a pin, out like a plow, in engaging people in Krishna's service and understanding that the process of becoming Krishna conscious is a gradual process. It's not that all of once one drops everything, but by the chanting, one loses desire for the things that don't give one a taste in the material world, and one gains a desire for spiritual activities. And that was my personal experience with His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. By hearing from Prabhupada, the transcendental sound vibration, Bhavanti Rit Karna Rasayana Kata, goes from the ear to the heart. And then one gets, I'll give you a little Sanskrit, Tajoshanadashu Apavarga-Vargmani. One proceeds on the path of Apavarga. Now that Apavarga is the opposite of Pavarga. Pavarga means the difficulties of dealing with the material world, such as hard struggles and foaming at the mouth like horses do sometimes. Fainting and death. So one transcends that gradually by the hearing process. Hearing Krishna's name, hearing about Krishna's pastimes, and then gradually people make progress. I mean, we have, or at least I have, faith in Krishna's names, that just by chanting Hare Krishna, if one has heard the holy name from the lips of a pure devotee, then the holy name will gradually cleanse the heart. And that's Lord Chaitanya's statement, the Shikshashtaka, Cheto Darpana Marjanam Bhava Mahadvani Nirvapanam, that it gradually cleanses the heart. So one gravitates towards transcendental pleasure, which is Kevala Ananda Kanda. It is only happiness, Ananda Kanda. It is the path of happiness. So this is Krishna consciousness. So we have to just get people Krishna consciousness. I remember many years ago when I go out to the universities and speak to people, I would often distribute japa beads to people just around the student union and ask people, please chant one round of this today. Come back tomorrow. Tell me how you feel. And so invariably, if they chanted, they would come back the next day and say, wow, I feel really light and happy. What did you put in these beads? And then I said, you know, just keep trying. Keep trying, you know, you don't have to believe in it. So this is also proof that Krishna consciousness is not simply some indoctrination. Because even if someone doesn't believe in the Krishna conscious philosophy, but just hears and chants the holy names, then everything becomes clear to that person, even if they don't know what the holy names mean. Just like this story in the Ramayana of Valmiki, who was sort of tricked into chanting. He was told to chant Mara, which means death. And he chanted it over and over, Mara, 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 Ram, and it became Ram. And so he became such a great pure devotee, he was able to write the Ramayana, one of the great histories, Itihasa, the great histories, one of the two great histories in Indian culture. So everything is there in the holy names. Namachin Tamani Krishna Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. Purna, Shuddha, it is complete, it is pure, it is full of ras. Ras means like taste, it's very tasty. It is eternally liberated. So I have faith that if people chant, their whole lives will become successful, beneficial, and auspicious. And they'll be happy. So let's read Prabhupada's purport. Prabhupada's purport. Persons who are unknowledgeable, falsely identified with the gross material consciousness and are full of material designations, just like all of us. What material designation? I'm old, I'm young, I am male, I'm female, I'm white, I'm black, I'm an American, I am a human being. That's actually a material designation. I'm an earthling. All these, and we've imposed these upon ourselves. You know, we think we're American. We're not. Anyway, that's obvious. This body is a gift of the material nature, and one who is too much attached to the bodily consciousness is called manda, or a lazy person without understanding of the spirit soul. Ignorant men think of the body as the self. They accept bodily connections with others as kinsmanship. The land in which the body is obtained is their object of worship. God bless America. Da, 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 da. Yeah, we want God to bless America. There's no problem with that. But, you know, we don't worship America. It's just a temporary designation. And next life, you know, I could be born anywhere. I could be born in Fiji. I could be born on the moon or Mars and be a Martian with two little antennas coming out of my head. You know, so every life we're actually attached to these designations. And so we consider certain people to be our family. Next life, we'll have a different family. Next life, different family. It's all due to the designations of this body. And they consider the formularities of religious rituals to be the ends in themselves. In other words, because you're born in a certain family, then you're born in a certain religion. You know, why are you Muslim, Christian, Jewish, Hindu? Because that's what my parents were. No. Krishna consciousness is not a religion in that particular sense. Krishna consciousness is the science of the soul. In other words, it transcends all the other religions, or all religions, let's say other religions, because Krishna consciousness is not a religion. Krishna consciousness is a science, and you can apply that science to any religion to understand religion better and to understand which aspects of the religion are transcendental and which are simply formalities and religious rituals, because there are rituals in every religion. I mean, for example, the religion that I was brought up in, there's a ritual when, in the fall, when you harvest the crops, and it's called Sukkot, and everybody drinks some wine. There's a ritual when you become 13. It's called a bar mitzvah or a bas mitzvah, depending on whether you are a male or a female. So these things are not actually the essence of religion. We have these six great personalities called the six Goswamis, who were the initial followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who perused, that means read, the different religious literatures in the world, including all the Vedic literatures, and came up with the essence, what's called the Sat Dharma, eternal principles that are transcendental to all the sectarian religions. And that's what they're presenting to us. We are followers of these six Goswamis. Particularly, we are followers of Rupa Goswami, who compiled books like the Nectar Devotion, known as Nectar Devotion, was known as the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So, let's continue. Social work, nationalism, and altruism are some of the activities for materially designated persons. Under the spell of such designations, they are always busy in the material field. For them, spiritual realization is a myth, and so they are not interested. Those who are enlightened in spiritual life, however, should not try to agitate such materially engrossed persons. Better to prosecute one's own spiritual activities silently. Such bewildered persons may be engaged in such primary moral principles of life as nonviolence and similar materially benevolent work. In other words, it's a step up. It's not the final step. Like yoga is a step up. Nonviolence is a step up. Altruism is a step up. You know, that's morality. And then you go to a higher level like that. But it takes time. It may take many, many births to come to a higher level, to the highest level. Men who are ignorant cannot appreciate activities in Krishna consciousness, and therefore Lord Krishna advises us not to disturb them and simply waste valuable time. But the devotees of the Lord are more kind than the Lord because they understand the purpose of the Lord, so sometimes they disturb them. Consequently, they undertake all kinds of risks, even to the point of approaching ignorant men, to try to engage them in the acts of Krishna consciousness, which are absolutely necessary for the human being. However, they know time, place, and circumstance, and they don't try to do the impossible. They take a risk. Then someone may say no, someone may get aggravated, but they are careful. Like when Srila Prabhupada came to America, he studied the situation. He studied the mentality. He had actually read books about America, and then when he got to America, he actually stayed in Butler, Pennsylvania at first and just studied the Americans just to see what the different psychology and the mentality was. And then he adapted the presentation, even to the extent that he encouraged people to chant by saying, you chant Hare Krishna and stay high forever. For those of you who don't know what stay high forever means, I will explain. Prabhupada was preaching in the 1960s. In the 1960s, there were a lot of people who were rebelling against society, as is the case right now with the present upheaval in society. So, anyway, they were rebelling, and one of the aspects of their rebellion was that they were taking different types of intoxication, particularly marijuana and something called LSD. And sometimes they took forms of intoxication, hallucinogenics, that were actually more potent than LSD, something called STP. And I know some of you think STP is like a motor oil, but it wasn't at that particular point. And they would take that, and sometimes these trips would last for several days. And people would say, I'm really high. Of course, it actually meant I'm really low. I'm in an illusion within an illusion within an illusion. So Prabhupada saw that. He said, well, people want to get high. Okay, Krishna consciousness gets them high. And not only does it get them high, it keeps them high. So that's why Prabhupada had the phrase, stay high forever. So you see, the point I'm making is that Prabhupada really understood how to present Krishna consciousness. And if you look at some of the early videos of the devotees at 26 Second Avenue, they were actually chanting to get high. And it's one of the points with chanting Hare Krishna, you get high. In other words, you just feel happy, the doors of perception open, you're able to understand things, you're peaceful. So many things that are byproducts of the chanting of holy name. The actual point of chanting the holy name is that one loves Krishna. One realizes one's spiritual identity and loves Krishna. But as one is getting to love Krishna, one becomes peaceful and experiences less agitation of the senses and things like that. And so Prabhupada understood how to get people to chant Hare Krishna. And that's really all we have to do too. And that's why Prabhupada very much appreciated George Harrison, because George Harrison was the person, perhaps one of the persons most responsible for popularizing the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. I mean, he really chanted, and some of the other Beatles chanted too, but George Harrison was completely dedicated to Srila Prabhupada. At one point, George Harrison said to Prabhupada, if you want, I will shave my head and join you. And Prabhupada said, no, you're doing so much more service for Krishna than you could do simply, let's say, being a brahmachari or a normal householder. So Prabhupada encouraged him, and Prabhupada spent so much time with George Harrison instructing him how to present the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And that we understand that George Harrison is now assisting Srila Prabhupada wherever Srila Prabhupada is. Okay, next verse. Mayi sarvani karmani sanyasya dhyatma chetasa nirashir niramamo bhutva yudhyasva vigatas dvaraha. Mayi, unto me, sarvani, all sorts of karmani activities, sanyasya, giving up completely, adhyatma, with full knowledge of the self, chetasa, by consciousness, nirashihi, without desire for profit, nirmamaha, without ownership, bhutva, be so being, yudhyasva, fight, vigata jvaraha, without being lethargic. Therefore, Arjuna, surrendering all your works unto me with full knowledge of me, without desires for profit, with no claims to proprietorship, and free from lethargy, fight. So Krishna knows that he can directly give Arjuna the sauce, so to speak, and tell him what he should do. So he understands that Arjuna is not just like an ordinary person materially attached that he shouldn't disturb the mind of. Krishna is actually disturbing the mind of Arjuna because Arjuna is ready to hear. He just says, He says to Arjuna, surrender all your works unto me. I mean, someone really has to be right there at the pinnacle of spiritual advancement to be able to take that one. I mean, whew. Going up to someone and saying, therefore, O Mr. Jones, surrender all your works to me. Full knowledge of me, that's easier. But without desires for profit, I get to keep all the profit. With no claims to proprietorship, you don't own anything. And free from lethargy, lethargy means procrastination, everything. Fight or do what you're supposed to do. So this is surrender. Sharanam or Sharanagati. Full knowledge of Krishna, these are the requisites. Without desire for any personal profit, no claims to proprietorship, and enthusiastic. That's what freedom from lethargy is. And the Nectar of Instruction touches upon these points when it says, Utsahan nasyadaryat tatat karma pavartana. Utsahan, enthusiasm, nisyad. Nisyad, we were talking about this morning, can mean either determination, it can also mean conviction. Of course, one is, they're pretty similar. I'm convinced, because if one has full faith, you know, Shraddha we talked about before, then one will do. Shraddha Shakti Vishaya Sakahichu Dridanitya. One has full faith. No doubts, go ahead. So enthusiasm, determination or conviction, and patience. Patience. One has to be ready to execute Krishna consciousness because it's all based on faith. Actually, I think everything is based on faith because if one has faith, one will be enthusiastic, one will be determined, and one will be patient. This is fact. So here, Arjuna's duty is to fight. Our duty may not be to fight in the same sense that Arjuna is fighting, but to at least be active in serving Krishna. And as we mentioned before, we're talking about the qualities of a pure devotee, and I don't think I completed that verse. Anyavi lashita shunyam jnana karma navratam anukulyena krishna anushilanam bhaktiritamam. So devoid of all the things I mentioned. And then serving Krishna favorably, enthusiastically, actively, and at the same time doing it according to what Krishna wants, and also being enthusiastic in doing it. Or doing it with love. It's not that Krishna needs anything. Krishna doesn't need Arjuna to fight. I mean, what does Krishna need Arjuna for when Krishna is controlling everything? He just wishes something happened, it's going to happen. But he wants to, for Arjuna's benefit, engage him in service. So it's like any service to Krishna. It's for the benefit of the person serving. So, purport. This verse clearly indicates the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita. Yes, it's true. To get us off of our easy chair and get us going. The Lord instructs that one has to become fully Krishna conscious to discharge duties as if in military discipline. Of course, not like the American military. Such an injunction. And it's not blind following. You know, don't get scared about this. It's that we have faith, we have trust, and we have love. It's not like in the military, if you don't do what you're supposed to do, you get put in the brig, which is actually a jail cell for military people. Such an injunction may make things a little difficult. Nevertheless, duties must be carried out with dependence on Krishna because that is the constitutional position of the living entity. We'll be happy. The living entity cannot be happy, there's probably talking about this, independent of the cooperation of the Supreme Lord, because the eternal constitutional position of the living entity is to become subordinate to the desires of the Lord. Arjuna was therefore ordered by Sri Krishna to fight as if the Lord were his military commander. Actually, the Lord was his chariot driver, which is interesting. Not many people in those days were ordered around by their chariot drivers. One has to sacrifice everything for the goodwill of the Supreme Lord and at the same time discharge prescribed duties without claiming proprietorship. Arjuna did not have to consider the order of the Lord. He had only to execute his order. The Supreme Lord is the soul of all souls. Therefore, one who depends solely, here's that word soul, and wholly on the Supreme Soul without personal consideration Or in other words, one who is fully Krishna conscious is called Adhyatma Chetas. Nirashi means that one has to act on the order of the master but should not expect fruit of results. The cashier may count millions of dollars for his employer, but he does not claim a cent for himself. Similarly, one has to realize that nothing in the world belongs to any individual person, but that everything belongs to the Supreme Lord. That is the real purport of Mayi, or unto me. And when one acts in such Krishna consciousness, certainly he does not claim proprietorship over anything. He can still use things that Krishna has given him. This consciousness is called Nirmama, or nothing is mine. And if there is any reluctance to execute such a stern order which is without consideration of so-called kinsmen in the bodily relationship, that reluctance should be thrown off. In this way, one may become Vigatadvara. It means liberated from the fever, or without feverish mentality or lethargy. Everyone, according to his quality and position, has a particular type of work to discharge, and all such duties may be discharged in Krishna consciousness as described above. That will lead one to the path of liberation. And we will end here. Tomorrow we will continue with text 31. So we will stop sharing the screen and then take a few questions when I unmute everybody. Let's give me 1 second. Krishna Govinda. Okay, who wants to be first in asking a question?
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Ah, Swapna, good to see you.
Yeah, so I have a question, 2 questions. The first question is, in the Krishna book, I read a while ago that Krishna would punish one of the merchant taking garments to for Kamsa. So he asked for the garment, but that merchant would refuse to give him and Balaram
the garments.
Then Krishna kills him. Like, Krishna's punishment is mercy, but killing him, I couldn't believe that Krishna would do that.
So this is, of course, this is a pastime of Krishna that's in Mathura. Now, for those who don't know the story, Krishna entered Mathura and there was this really demoniac person named Kamsa, who happened to be Krishna's uncle, in fact, who was planning to kill Krishna in different ways. And he had actually sent, I don't know how many demons he sent, but he sent almost unlimited demons to Vrindavan to kill Krishna. That's what mentioned in the Krishna book. And so this person was an associate of Kamsa, you know, he was a associate of this evil criminal, and Krishna gave him the opportunity to serve him, and this person didn't want to do it. He actually fought verbally with Krishna, and Krishna just took the clothes and gave him a head cut or something. So But the point is that anyone who gets killed by Krishna directly gets liberated. So that's mercy. The person opposed God. And I think Krishna is killing everybody. I mean, haven't we heard about the virus? Haven't we heard about old age? Haven't we heard about everybody dying? That's the time factor. The time factor is actually related with Krishna. And Krishna has a purpose. You know, there's people's karma. But I think one time Prabhupada said, you know, if you're interested in looking at killers, why not investigate the biggest killer? That's Krishna. Because Krishna's killing everybody. And if Krishna kills you directly, it's a lot better than if Krishna kills you through old age or some disease like that. So this washerman was liberated.
Yes.
Not a bad deal, is it?
Yes.
If one gets liberated by the Supreme Lord. So this washerman was actually on the level of look at Agasura. You're familiar with the demons in Vrindavan? Like Agasura and Bakasura.
Yes.
and all these other nice people, Rishtashura. So this washerman was on that same level. He was an accomplice to this great criminal who was actually torturing people. Kamsa was putting people, not only people, he put Krishna's mother and father in jail and killed practically not all, but six of Krishna's siblings. That's pretty bad. So you got this, the accomplices, just like you have now this whole thing about the police department in Minneapolis. And there were some police who actually did the act, and there's others who watched and didn't do anything about it, so they're all held responsible. So when you're an accomplice to a criminal, you're actually held responsible. And if Krishna takes care of the justice, that's pretty cool. I mean, I wouldn't mind it if Krishna just like killed me. I'm not asking for it. But I wouldn't mind it. It would be pretty cool. And sometimes even Krishna has his devotees come down from the spiritual world so he can have a fight with them and kill them. You know the story of Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha? I think you know that Swami, Aswapna.
Yes.
So these are all special persons too. They're not just ordinary persons that Krishna directly deals with. Okay, thank you for that question. Good question.
Thank you.
So, who else has a question? Okay, Radha Padmaji. You gotta
Hare
unmute
Krishna
yourself.
Guru Maharaj, please accept
Hare.
my humble obeisances. Guru Maharaj, I was a little bit confused in text number 27.
Okay.
This says that the spirit soul is bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm thinking that there's a natural tendency in every individual to be appreciated for the things that they have done or
Yes.
so where does these two things fit, Gurudev?
So, okay. It's a natural tendency to need or want feedback for what one has done and one has done a good job. And then that particular individual receives that feedback or appreciation, as you may say, should understand that, yes, I appreciate that because that means that Krishna is blessing me to allow me to do this particular activity. In other words, I have the blessings of Krishna. And also be humble enough to understand that whatever talent or ability I manifested doing that particular activity came from Krishna, not from me. You understand what I mean? So both things have to be there. I mean, I like to be appreciated if someone says, "Hey, you gave a nice class the other day." Let's say, yesterday, whatever. Gave me a nice class. Oh, you're appreciated, but also I want to know why the person is saying it, not just a general thing. So the person may say, "Well, because that was a wonderful realization you had about Raghunath Das Goswami, who we spoke about yesterday, and his understanding." So then I will feel happy to get that appreciation because I will know that I have done something to please Krishna instead of thinking, "I am great." So that's the difference. If you begin to think, "I am great, I am wonderful, I'm fantastic, no one's better than me," or whatever, I mean, that's false ego. But if we take the appreciation in the right way, and certainly we do need appreciation, it encourages us in our spiritual activities. All right?
Yes, thank you, Gurudev.
Okay, thank you. One more question. Who else has a question here? This is your last opportunity to ask
I
a
have
question.
another question, Prabhu, if
Yes.
nobody wants to ask. Like
That's fine as well.
today I saw a video about Lord Jagannath, that
Uh-huh.
the Krishna's heart is placed in the statue of Jagannath. Is that true, Prabhu?
Yeah, well, it's a type of installation, yes, that they do.
Yes.
That's a particular ritual that they do when they're worshiping Lord Jagannath.
So this
Yeah.
heart, actually, they found it when they cremated Krishna's body,
No,
like.
that's not true.
Okay.
This is it's a ritual by which they invoke the presence of Krishna there.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's not that Krishna doesn't have a material body. There's no question of cremation. Yeah, that's that was I know about that story, but it's a made-up story. That's from Orissa. And sometimes in India you'll find all these like really interesting mythological stories that are not true. Thank you for asking that question.
Thank you.
Okay, it's time for one more question from some lucky soul.
Hi, Krishna Dave.
Hey, Veda Priya, Hare Krishna.
Have a question about, so I've never heard this explained at all, the six Goswamis and how we follow Rupa Goswami specifically. Why not the other ones, or who are the other ones, and how they relate to Krishna consciousness?
Yeah, actually, we follow them all,
Okay.
not just Rupa Goswami. But Rupa Goswami pretty much consolidated the teachings of the other Goswamis. See,
Okay.
all their teachings are great, wonderful. But Rupa Goswami, in two books, actually, what's called the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which is Prabhupada published as Nectar Devotion. And then also another book called the Ujjala Nilamani, which is the postgraduate study of that particular book. Rupa Goswami sort of tied in everything. We talking last night about Raghunath Das Goswami, taught everything that tied in everything that Raghunath Das Goswami taught, that Sanatana Goswami taught, and the other Goswamis taught. Maybe didn't give all the small details, but it's the general study of the teachings of all the Goswamis and presented in such a way that's easy to understand. Is that right?
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I mean,
thank
not
you.
only the six Goswamis in Vrindavan, but we accept the teachings of every bona fide spiritualist in our line. But Rupa Goswami did the consolidation in a way that I think no one else did. Okay.
Thank you.
Great question. Great question. Okay, everybody, it is time to say goodbye. So we'll see everybody tomorrow, same time, same station. Tune in. And we have no sponsors tonight, so anyway, tune in tomorrow night. All glories to His divine grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada.